Welcome to another edition of The Talking Stick. I'm your host, Sandy Johnson. The Talking Stick focuses on issues relating to the greater Earth-centered community. Traditionally, a talking stick has been used in circles, giving each person an opportunity to speak their mind without interruption. Some circles use stones or crystals instead of a stick, while in other circles, the talking stick can be anything from a piece of driftwood to a branch that has been beautifully carved and decorated. The talking stick puts the focus of the group's attention on this one person and what they have to say. Much like the talking stick, a microphone can be used in a similar manner. Through our talking stick, we aim to bring you insightful, educational, and entertaining programming of a spiritual nature. In this special edition of The Talking Stick, I will be talking with two distinguished guests, Dr. Isa Gucciardi and Dr. Stanley Krippner, both of the San Francisco area, and who will be speaking at the 4th Annual International Gathering of the Heart of the Healer Foundation, taking place from October 14th through the 17th of 2004 at the Mount Madonna Center in Watsonville, California. This is one of the largest gathering of shamans in which their potent medicine will be combined for a common goal, to build alliances based on commonalities that offers a realistic foundation for hope for the future. In this hour, we will explore the world of hypnosis, dreams, energy medicine, and how these aspects integrate with shamanism. My first guest is Dr. Isa Gucciardi, founding director of the Anamkara Foundation and the primary instructor of the Foundation's training programs in depth hypnosis, applied shamanism, and integrated energy medicine. She also holds degrees and certificates in transpersonal psychology, cultural anthropology, comparative religion, hypnotherapy, and transformational healing. She is the creator of Depth Hypnosis, a groundbreaking model that has won rave reviews from psychotherapeutic and spiritual counselors. What I would like to start off with is for you to explain to us a little bit about what Depth Hypnosis, Applied Shamanism, and Integrated Energy Medicine is.
Sure. Well, to do that, let me back up a little bit and talk a little bit about the foundation. Anamkara Foundation was established to support these training programs that we offer in those three areas, depth hypnosis, applied shamanism, and integrated energy medicine. And it was also established to create an organization for spiritual teachers and artists whose art reveals the divine, to come and visit the community and offer classes in the community, and to create a forum, a vehicle or a forum through which the ability to perceive the mystic stream, which flows underneath all traditions, is revealed. So that's why we established the foundation, and then the foundation does that piece of work, and then it also is the container for the three main programs that we offer training in, these three programs. In addition to the three programs, we also have other teachers who I have trained and who offer classes in, such as in drum making or in hypnobirthing, or weekly classes on journeying, the shamanic journey. And but the principal three main training programs are depth hypnosis, integrated energy medicine, and applied shamanism. And depth hypnosis, to start there, is a combination of hypnotherapy, transpersonal psychology, shamanism, and Buddhism. And so those four areas of study come together to create a very dynamic therapeutic model where people are able to move through their issues very quickly. And the training that we offer there, we offer a hypnotherapy certification training, and then we offer a master practitioner training as well. And we also, of course, offer individual sessions in depth hypnosis through the foundation. Then the applied shamanism program takes core shamanic principles principles that are common to most, if not all, shamanic traditions, and brings them into a format which is able to be used in the modern context. So it's applied shamanism in that it's applied to the modern context. So we are lifting very important ancient principles from these different shamanic traditions, and we are creating a vehicle which has relevance to people today. And the thing that I like a lot about applied shamanism is that you do not have to weed through or dig through the cultural context or the cultural overlay of these powerful practices. The practices are right there, and they are made relevant for the modern therapeutic, especially therapeutic context. And then integrated energy medicine is a program. Sorry, let me back up. And then the applied shamanism program is something which has several different levels of learning as well. There's the introduction to the shamanic journey, then there's two foundation level courses, and then there's an advanced practitioner course. And then in the integrated energy medicine, it also has a very similar structure. It has the foundation courses and then the advanced practitioner courses. And the integrated energy medicine draws upon information which is contained in several different esoteric traditions about the nature of energy, and particularly the energy systems of the body and ways in which to move energy around through the use of rays and contacting and manipulation is a bad word, but it's because it has can have a negative context, but in this way, manipulation in a positive way in terms of movement or application of one energy field to a situation which requires assistance on an energy level.
I would imagine that these three different aspects, depth hypnosis, applied shamanism, and integrated energy medicine, all kind of relate to one another and have a connection to one another. Is that true?
That's true. Actually, the way that they all came about is I started teaching depth hypnosis because I had developed it in the process of practicing hypnotherapy, and I became so overwhelmed with clients that I, even though I was working, you know, seeing 30 people a week, I still had a waiting list of 10 to 20 people in any given week. So I decided to start teaching it, and so that other people could help other people.
Right.
So I started teaching depth hypnosis, and then I realized, wait a minute, they need more information on shamanism. So I really developed the applied shamanism program, having studied with shamans from many different traditions and having studied shamanism itself for about 25 years. I kind of brought together everything that I had learned and created that program. And then it was funny because I had some advanced practitioners that I had trained who were in practice, and they said, you know, Issa, there's something else that you're doing that you are not necessarily teaching. And I realized that's true. There's the whole energy medicine component that I have not broken out and articulated. So then I created the energy medicine program. So in that way, they're all related, and depth hypnosis weaves information from both energy medicine and applied shamanism through it. But people who are interested in applied shamanism may not be interested in learning hypnotherapy, and people that are interested in energy medicine may not also be interested in hypnotherapy. And certainly people who are teachers, people who are practitioners of other kinds of healing modalities, people who are parents, you know, people who deal with people all the time have reported that just having the information in energy medicine and applied shamanism as, you know, under their belts as something that they can draw from has really increased their quality of life in terms of understanding the sort of unseen processes that are moving behind what we experience in the material world on the physical level.
Now, where would Reiki, that kind of energy work, fit in? Is that something that you explore through your programs as well?
Right. In the Integrated Energy Medicine Program, through that program, you actually receive all three of the major rays of the Reiki tradition as part of the training. Reiki is an energy medicine system which was developed by Dr. Usui, a Japanese doctor, in the 1800s. And he basically perceived these, there were several different rays that he received beyond the other three that are the main subject of the external transmission through the symbols that he assigned them. And he was perceiving these energy fields, he assigned them a symbol, and then he had people focus on a symbol as he gave an external transmission of that ray to them. And then that gave them the capacity to come into contact with the nature of that particular ray. And he did it with those three rays. And those three rays are just, you know, a few of the many rays that are available and for people to use in for different reasons and different contexts. And in the energy medicine class, I do provide this external transmission, this sort of history that is what goes along with the external transmission. But one of the important things that we do in integrated energy medicine is we help you learn how to receive internal transmission so that you would receive, we teach you how to receive these rays yourself so that you're not necessarily dependent on an external transmission line, that you would be able to draw upon the many rays and many fields that are available by going inward, and we teach you how to do that. So although we offer Reiki through the integrated energy medicine, it's just one piece of a much larger scope of work with the rays. And you'll see with all the programs that I teach, I am always looking to empower people. That's really what the goal of all of this is that people become empowered and they learn how to listen to their own voice and they learn how to trust their own knowing. And there's a kind of joke in the community where, you know, people will ask me a question in class and I'll almost invariably answer Journey on it. You know, go inward and find out that answer.
Right.
So, and well, we provide the tools for people to be able to do that.
What kind of examples can you briefly give us about how these ancient techniques can be applied in order to enhance our modern lives?
Well, a really good example of that is one that may be known to people who have had contact with shamanism, the concept of soul retrieval and soul loss. Mm-hmm. This is a, in shamanism, there are three principal reasons for imbalance or disease. One is power loss, one is soul retrieval, and one is the energetic interference which occurs in the vacuum of soul loss and soul and power loss. So to take the concept of soul loss, most modern Americans experience and are suffering from soul loss. And there's nothing in our lexicon, there's nothing in our conceptual way of understanding disease which has this concept, which people will often describe as just feeling really depressed or feeling really blue or having chronic fatigue, not being able to really get motivated, feeling a lack or a loss of ability to focus. These are the kinds of things that soul loss might be related to. And soul loss is generally due to some kind of a trauma, and it can be something from an experience of like a car wreck all the way to having, being a child and being beaten on a regular basis, or even having a single experience where someone has been very abusive and you have a part of yourself, a part of your soul in shamanic terms has left the body. And when you see someone after a car wreck, I don't know if you've ever experienced this, but if you see someone after a car wreck or after a fire, they are often in shock, mm-hmm. and they're not really all there. I mean, and I think that the experience of being in shock is that moment where a part of your soul has left. The part of you that can get away from the experience does. And what will often happen is that part may not come back as the person starts picking up and, you know, going about their life. There's a part of them that remains outside of time. And people will often say, you know, I was never the same after that. Mm-hmm. And if someone ever says that to me, I know that I have to look for soul loss. I have to find out, okay, what is the part of the self or the soul that was left outside of time? And so in what a shaman would do in a traditional culture in the case of something like this is that a shaman would go into an altered state and do a journey, which is like an active meditation, to journey outside of time to find that piece of soul and bring it back to the person and restore it to them so that that part of themselves that was lost can now reunite with the rest of the self and go ahead and continue developing. And what people generally experience with this kind of healing is a renewed sense of energy, a renewed sense of focus, an ability to plug into life in a way that they had not been able to before. And as I say, in a traditional context, the shaman would be doing that work. They would be doing the journey. They would be going outside of time. They would be bringing that part back. But the way that I have changed it in the applied shamanism class is I teach people how to do that for themselves. And in depth hypnosis, I help my clients do that for themselves so that they are participating. They are learning how to go outside of time. They are learning how to contact these parts of themselves that they had disconnected from and knowing that they can do that safely and reintegrate that part back into the rest of their lives. And this is a very empowering experience from the point of view of being able to know that you can do this and also empowering in that you receive all of the life energy that you had left behind in that outside of time when that piece of soul tried to separate from the rest of the energy of the person.
There's so many aspects of healing that ventures throughout the many different traditions of shamanism, and I think that's probably one of the things that seems to draw so many people's attention to shamanism and want to learn more about it. What I would like to learn more about before we run out of time with you today is about the gathering of shamans that are coming up in Watsonville over the week of October 14th through the 17th, and you're going to be a speaker there speaking on the Hawaiian Huna tradition.
That's right.
Can you give us a little bit more information about the Huna tradition and what you're looking forward to with this experience coming up?
Sure. First of all, I'd like to say I think it's a wonderful thing that the Heart of the Healer Foundation is doing, is bringing together these different shamans from these different traditions, because I really think that shamanism is very much the same the world over. And in coming together, I'm really looking forward to being able to share our common lineages and or the commonality in our lineages. And the Huna tradition specifically is a window into a much more ancient tradition which flows under most shamanic traditions. In a way, you can think of the appearance of shamanic traditions in various cultures as being flowers emerging from the same vine into different cultural environments. And that's why this gathering is interesting to me. And the Huna tradition is the Huna tradition, excuse me, it's the shamanic tradition of Hawaii. And it is focused primarily in the ability to create and affect physical manifestation from a non-physical level. The practitioners of Huna are masters of this. And in my classes that I teach in Hawaii every year, we focus on these principles of manifestation. The Huna tradition holds many different concepts which break down the whole process of movement from the unseen into the seen, so that you would, for instance, there's a story that Max Freedom Long, who was an early researcher in the Huna tradition, reports, where a missionary had broken his leg, and a kahuna was called, a shaman was called from a neighboring village, and he came and he worked on the etheric body, which we would call the etheric body of the physical body, and repatterned on the etheric level the bone of the missionary, and then reinserted it or reapplied it to the physical body, and the missionary stood up and walked. So that kind of mastery of the non-physical affecting the physical is one of the most interesting aspects of the Huna tradition. And another important aspect of the Huna tradition is the development of the concept of forgiveness, or Ho'oponopono, which is a coming to resolution of difficulty. And in many ways, depth hypnosis is that. It is a coming to resolution of complexities that a person has been carrying with them, has been unable to resolve. And there are certain energetic pathways that the Huna tradition defines that you can send a difficulty or a complexity through to create peace and to create harmony. And there are a lot of different aspects of the Huna tradition, but those are the two most important ones, and they are complex in and of themselves, that we focus on in our classes in Hawaii, and that I'll be talking on at the conference in October.
Right, and this conference is a global gathering of shamans. It's the 4th annual international gathering of the Heart of the Healer Foundation. And what a lineup of people that are going to be speaking there. It looks like it's going to be a wonderful conference. And is this conference open to just people in the shamanic community, or is it open to the general public who may be more curious about these different traditions and the different healing modalities that go along with it?
Oh, it's definitely open to the general public, and I think one of the main ideas of the organizers was to create a forum for people who are have a passing interest in shamanism, who have heard about it but have been unable to contact a shaman, is to create a place where they can come and learn and hear these really, I mean, I'm excited myself to be sitting in circle with these people, because they are wonderful people who are representatives of their traditions, and it's a real opportunity. You don't normally find shamans from all these different lineages in one place, and I know that the organizers have said that you can come for one day or all 4 days of the conference, and I'm sure that you have the information of how people can contact the organizers in order to arrange that.
Yes, there is the website for Heart of the Healer, which is at www.heartofthehealer.org, and there they have links into more details on the gathering that's coming up at the Mount Madonna Center in Watsonville. So it sounds like a wonderful conference. Very exciting to be able to present this type of a conference, especially in our Northern California area. Dr. Issa Gicciardi, thank you very much for joining us.
Well, thank you so much, Sandy. I really appreciate your time and energy, and I wish you best in all of your endeavors.
Snake woman shedding her skin.
Snake woman shedding her skin. Shedding, shedding, shedding her skin. Shedding, shedding, shedding her skin. Snake woman shedding her skin. Snake woman shedding her skin. Shedding, shedding, shedding her skin. Shedding, shedding, shedding her skin.
Bird woman taking flight.
Bird woman taking flight. Taking, taking, taking flight. Taking, taking, taking flight. Bird woman taking flight. Bird woman taking flight. Taking, taking, taking flight. Taking, taking, taking flight.
Star woman shining bright.
Star woman shining bright. Shining, shining, shining bright. Shining, shining, shining bright. Star woman shining bright. Star woman shining bright. Shining, shining, shining bright. Shining, shining, shining bright.
Moon woman riding the night.
Moon woman riding the night. Riding, riding, riding the night. Riding, riding, riding the night. Moon woman riding the night. Moon woman riding the night.
Oh,
My next guest on this special edition of The Talking Stick is Dr. Stanley Krippner, professor of psychology at Saybrook Graduate School in San Francisco. Formerly, he was director of the Kent State University Child Study Center in Kent, Ohio, and the Maimonides Medical Center Dream Research Laboratory in Brooklyn, New York. He is also an author of several books, including his new one, The Psychological Impact of War on Civilians, an International Perspective. Dr. Krippner will be one of the many speakers featured at the Heart of the Healer Foundation Gathering of the Shamans in October of 2004. Welcome to the program, Stanley.
It's a pleasure.
I would like to first open it up with the studies that you've done around dreams and hypnosis. Can you explain what fascinated you about these mysterious realms enough to do your studies in them?
Well, basically, both dreams and hypnosis are aspects of a larger field called consciousness studies. And human consciousness and its varieties certainly have been a topic of great interest to me since childhood. I recorded my dreams when I was in high school. I began studying hypnosis when I was an undergraduate, and this led to scientific studies in both of those fields.
So what notable experiences can you share with us about your studies, and especially in the multitude of countries that you've visited?
Well, I have been studying dreams in half a dozen different countries, and there are some things that are similar, some things that are quite different. But basically what we find out is that dreaming life resembles waking life. People in big cities, say in Buenos Aires, Argentina, will dream more about skyscrapers than people who live in rural areas in Brazil. People will dream about foods that are typical to their cultures. People will dream about members of the family, if they have a family, more frequently than people who don't have a family. Now, your listeners might think, well, this is just common sense, but some 50 years ago, it wasn't common sense at all. It was believed that people dreamed about topics that were not a part of their everyday life, that they dreamed about activities that they wished would come true, that they dreamed about fantasy a great deal of the time. And now we find out that No, this is just a minority. By and large, dreaming life resembles waking life. And that in our dreaming life, we probably attempt to resolve some of the issues from waking life or just process some of the experiences we have had during the day. For some people, they don't let go of the daily anxieties at all. They keep working on these anxieties, keep being terrified by them, and don't find a solution. This is especially true of people who have suffered trauma, such as war combat trauma, rape trauma, automobile accident trauma. They will keep redreaming the trauma over and over again because it just doesn't seem to them that there is any way to resolve this. People who have suffered trauma often have series of nightmares and require very intensive professional help if they're ever going to work through and get by those nightmares that are very disturbing to their sleep.
Now, what about those of us who have kind of whimsical, fantastical type of dreams? Are the interpretations that we see in a lot of books, and is there more to interpreting dreams than, you know, what we're being shown in certain books?
Well, many of the books that you're talking about are called dream dictionaries, where somebody will have a dream about a snake and they go to the dream dictionary and will say, well, this means that you will have good luck. But of course you can't trust this because everybody's dream symbolism is different. One person might dream about a snake because the snake is a sex symbol. Another person might dream about a snake because a snake is a symbol of wisdom. Another person might dream about the snake because the snake represents something fearful. Another person might have a dream about a snake because it represents something sacred and holy. Well, the list goes on and on. One simple image like a snake or a bear or a river or a house can actually symbolize a number of different things, or it might symbolize nothing at all. Some people dream about snakes simply because they're interested in snakes, or because they just went to a zoo and saw several dozen snakes in the zoo.
If someone wanted to interpret their own dreams or analyze what's going on in their dreams, what would be your suggestion?
Well, I already said that the dream dictionaries aren't of much value. If anything, the dream dictionaries simply get a person started. They get a person interested in dreams and maybe encourages the person to come up with their own interpretations rather than what's in the book. There are some very good books around. Any of the books by Patricia Garfield, I would recommend. Any of the books by Gail Delaney, I would recommend. So these books are by respected dream researchers, and both have been presidents of the International Association for the Study of Dreams, which will have its annual convention in Berkeley, California, next summer, by the way. And, of course, anybody can attend that. There are also various dream groups that are held all over the country where people that get together once a week or once a month, and they work on dreams, and it's very helpful to talk about dreams with other people. Of course, the best way to approach this would be to pay some money and go to a psychotherapist who specializes in dreams. But that is not necessary. If somebody is on a budget, one can still enjoy dreams by getting some of these worthwhile books I mentioned, or participating in a group workshop.
Now, how does your interest with dreams and hypnosis integrate with the more spiritual realm of shamanism?
Well, of course, one of the ways that the shamans work is by paying attention to their dreams, and many of the techniques that they use employ suggestion. And so does hypnosis employ suggestion. So both the fields of hypnosis and the field of dreams are very integral to a study of shamanism. And by shamanism, of course, we mean the technology that is mainly found among native and indigenous people that enables a practitioner to get in touch with the so-called spirit world, to call upon nature, animals, birds, etc., to be of assistance in helping people and healing members of the community, and also in terms of taking voyages and trips to what we might call imaginative dimensions of the universe, what they would call the upper world and the lower world. But shamanism is much more than fantasy. It's really very practical. It's a group of techniques that has been developed by Native people over the centuries to help them assist members of their tribe or their clan or their social group solve real-life problems, relationship problems, health problems, vocational problems, spiritual problems.
Now, when we talk about shamanic states of consciousness, is that the same thing as going into that dream state?
Many shamans will take their clients or patients into a dream, and that is why dreams are such an important part of shamanism. They will maybe act out the dream. Some Native American tribes did this before the Europeans came. They had dream festivals in which people in the tribe would actually act out dreams, and this was beneficial, and the whole community could comment on what the dream might mean. Also, the shaman might come up with an interpretation based on the cosmology, the worldview, the cultural myths of the tribe. And seeing everybody in the tribe has the same belief system, this type of interpretation could be very helpful.
Now, you wrote an article about conflicting perspectives of shamanism. Can you give us some examples of that?
Well, I suppose the major example would be in terms of what the shamans do in the field of healing, because shamans do different things depending on the part of the world they are from, but all shamans are involved in healing sicknesses in one way or the other. And they typically will do this by collecting herbs, and they will have established herbal medicines that have worked in the past and that seem to be working at the present time, and then they will prescribe these herbs to the patient. But in some cases, there is a more, shall we say, occult problem at work. Maybe the sick person has been the victim of a hex or a curse, and then the shaman will have to make a journey to another realm of existence, the spirit world, or the past, or the future, and sort of heal the sick person by vanquishing the adversary in the other world, or at least making peace with the adversary in the other world. If the sick person is a victim of sorcery, the shaman will have techniques and rituals that can fight the sorcery. Now, from the Western point of view, this is the placebo effect. It goes into what one might expect, and you always have to be aware of the fact that people typically get out of something what they expect out of a healing ceremony. But nevertheless, this is one of the activities that shamans are called upon to do very, very frequently. And I have seen them do this in many of the places I have been, where they have worked with a person who is ill or sick or the victim of some sort of a sorcery or hex, and the shaman will use the herbs, will use prayers, will use power objects such as crystals, and many times, of course, the patient will recover. And if the patient doesn't recover, the shaman often loses his or her job, and another shaman is brought in to take that shaman's place.
Can you give us a little bit of an example of why ritual and going through ceremonies like this in shamanism is so important?
Well, I think that ritual and ceremony is important in any type of attempt to change behavior or change attitudes. You certainly have ritual in medical practice. The doctor or the nurse wears a particular uniform, and the doctor or nurse will give a pill or give an injection with cautionary statements and a regimen so that the patient knows what to expect. In psychotherapy, there is a ritual. The patient sits or lays down in a certain way, and the conversation or the type of therapy that is used proceeds in a certain way. A ritual is any type of organized behavior and activities that is designed to meet a certain goal. Some rituals are more elaborate than others. We call those rituals ceremonies, and some rituals are not very elaborate at all. But if there is a pattern to them, if there is a step-by-step procedure to attaining a goal, and in this case, getting a sick person well, we can call it a ritual. And of course it's very important because the patient is led through a process that the patient expects will be beneficial to him or to her. When I was talking with Rolling Thunder, a Cherokee Shoshone medicine man, he said that he would like to meet a physician. And I got the two of them together, and they spoke for several hours, And the physician said, well, you know, we both do about the same thing. Rolling Thunder does a ritual. He does drumming. He does singing. He does chanting. He gives the patient some herbs, and usually the patient gets well. I do a ritual, too. I write out a prescription on a piece of paper that gets some medicine to the patient, and the patient usually gets well. In both cases, expectation and belief will really help the person get well after the ritual is over.
So the ritual basically sets kind of a psychological process for the person to make that positive change in their life.
Yes, it sets off a series of psychological events that work their way into a process that by and large can be very beneficial, again, depending upon the person's degree of trust, belief, hope, and expectation. Now, at the Mount Madonna Center that you spoke of, we will be having some actual rituals that shamans have been using in different parts of Latin America and other parts of the world, and people who come to the conference will have a chance to participate in these rituals, and who knows, there might be some benefit that comes from these rituals to some of the participants.
Sure. Can you tell us a little bit about the talk that you're going to be giving there at the Gathering of the Shamans?
Well, the conference is actually sponsored by a group of practitioners led by Oscar Quesada, who is a shaman himself as well as a psychologist. He comes from Peru, and he has studied the Pachacuti Mesa approach to shamanism. By mesa, of course, we mean a table, and the table can be flat on the ground or it can be an elevated table. I have seen mesas that are a collection of very, very beautiful objects placed on a blanket, and each of the objects has great symbolic meaning, and the shaman will select the objects that he thinks are needed to help that particular patient understand the nature of his or her dreams or sickness or malady and hopefully get well. So there will be other shamanic traditions represented in addition to the Peruvian tradition, and there will be shamans and shamanic students from different parts of the country participating. But again, people can come to the conference who have never been exposed to shamanism and who want to find out a little bit about this very, very ancient practice.
Before we run out of time with you, Stanley, I would like to talk a little bit about the new book that you have out called The Psychological Impact of War Trauma on Civilians, an International Perspective. I wanted to get your perspective in how the book and your experience has related to how people in our country are psychologically handling our current situation globally and the current war in Iraq.
Well, this book is a collection of essays by people from all over the world who have worked with war victims, mainly women and children. And the book came out shortly after the invasion of the Taliban-controlled Afghanistan. And so we have a chapter on how the Taliban was victimizing women in Afghanistan and taking away their rights. But then there are also chapters that range from the Holocaust and the persecution of Jews and Slavic people and other minorities in Europe to the various massacres in Burundi and Rwanda in Africa to the former Yugoslavia and the various wars taking place there. So there are a number of parts of the world that have suffered in recent decades from war, and now we find out that in the 20th and 21st century, civilians are suffering more than soldiers. And with mass destruction from bombs and the like, these civilians are either getting killed, losing members of their family, or are suffering trauma, such as nightmares, such as fears. And the book tells about the ways that psychologists, anthropologists, physicians, and ordinary lay people have been helping the victims of war. The book is actually edited by myself and Dr. Teresa McIntyre from Portugal, and if it's not available in the bookstore, I would suggest people go to Amazon.com to order it, because they get a big discount by going to look for it on the Internet.
And if one wanted to find more information about other publications that you've been involved with, such as articles that you've had published, could they find that on your website?
Well, that's an excellent idea. They can go to www.stanleykrippner.com, C-O-M, and they will certainly find a whole list of books there, most of which are available from Amazon.com. And they can also see some pictures of shamans, because there's pictures about shamans, there are articles about shamans, and even the book about war victims has an entire chapter on shamans, because shamans were victims of the communists when the communists came to power in Russia and began to kill the shamans because the shamans were not good Marxists, not good communists. So you can see how all these things, you know, tie together.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. They tie together because we all share that common thread, that underlying universal kind of mystic cord that runs through the universe. And I, to me, being able to be more in touch with your spirituality is allowing yourself to be more opened up to receiving the gifts of that universal consciousness.
Well, that's a beautiful way to put it. And that universal consciousness and that common core, of course, is being threatened by all the wars going on in the world. The people in Iraq can't even agree amongst themselves who is going to be leading the new government, because there are so many various religious and political sects in Iraq that are at war with each other and that are making things very difficult for the United States and Great Britain and the soldiers who thought they were doing a good deed, but now are running into serious trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, the world is very much at risk, and sometimes it helps to take a look at old ways of maintaining peace, what the shamans were doing, what the native people were doing, what the aboriginal and indigenous people were doing, that might have some relevance to our current problems.
One final question here before we let you go, Stanley. I wanted to know whether or not at this conference, the 4th Annual International Gathering of the Heart of the Healer Foundation coming up in October, whether or not, since there's going to be so many different shamans gathering from so many different traditions and so many places around the world, is there going to be a ritual for peace, for global peace?
Oh, yes, there will be wonderful. Several peace rituals there, and the shamans and their assistants and the lay people will all join together to do meditation, to do prayers, to do rituals. So in some small way, at least, maybe this will make an impact upon the 50-some wars that are going on in the world right now. It's not only the war in Afghanistan and the war in Iraq. There are dozens of other wars going on, most of them civil wars that we hear very little about.
Want to thank you once again, Dr. Stanley Krippner, who is the professor of psychology at the Saybrook Graduate School in San Francisco.
It was a great pleasure being with you.
That wraps up this special two-part edition of The Talking Stick. For more information about the Heart of the Healer Foundation and the Gathering of Global Shamans in October of 2004, please visit the website www.heartofthehealer.org. I would like to thank my special guests, Dr. Isa Gucciardi, founder and director of the Anamkara Foundation. You can get more information about her foundation at AnamkaraFoundation.org. That's AnamkaraFoundation.org. And my thanks to Dr. Stanley Krippner, professor of psychology at the Saybrook Graduate School in San Francisco. You can learn more about Dr. Krippner at his website at www.stanleykrippner.com. StanleyKrippner.com. You have been listening to The Talking Stick, a program presented by Fellowship of the Earth Community Radio, 106.1 FM, KQRP, LP, Salida, California. Please visit us online at kqrp.com or fote.org. This program is hosted, engineered, and produced by Sandy Johnson. This program is free to rebroadcast on non-commercial, community, and micro radio stations. If you would like to excerpt from this program, please contact me at kqrp1061@yahoo.com. Once again, the email address is kqrp1061@yahoo.com. I hope you enjoyed the show, and thanks for listening.